Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Enterprise Business 100, Section 12 for Spring Semester 2015. Lecture 2, delivered on April 29, 2015. The title of this lecture is The Agency Dilemma.
Today, the agency dilemma. Closing this semester, I had already told you this very early in the course when you probably were kind of not noticing some of the things that I was telling you that looked a little bit obscure. But in the world of finance and law, an agent represents the seller, a broker represents the buyer, a dealer represents himself. This use of agency, an agent, in the current lecture is a different sort of animal. You see, there are many relationships in which you will engage, in which you have engaged in your life, where there's a name for each of the two parties to the relationship. Now, as I go on in this lecture, I'm going to use the word person. Understand that in law and in business, person does not necessarily mean a people. Yes, you are a person, but in a marriage, you and the woman would be a person. A corporation is not a they. It is an it. It is a person. Now, that can go too far. Our Supreme Court took that to an extreme where they assigned, well, since a corporation is a person, it has people rights under the Constitution. We see that linguistically sometimes where a word slips away from its original intent and begins to expand too far. And that's what the Supreme Court fell into when it acknowledged that because a corporation is a person and the Constitution deals with persons who are citizens of the country, then a corporation has the same rights under the Constitution as a person. Specifically, the right to contribute to political campaigns as it wishes. And that is distorting a process that should not have been disturbed in that way, but that's another conversation. But for the purposes of this lecture, though, however, a person can be an individual like you. It could be a corporation. It could be actually a partnership is a person, a marriage would be a person, as long as there is a legal way to view that entity under the law as a single thing. Using that as our basis, I will bring up certain relationships, and I'll use the word person. Agent. A person who is charged under contract, and I'll put that in parentheses, under contract. And remember what I mean by contract. With maximizing some welfare of another person. Now that another person is called the principal. The principal. And that's with a P-A-L. In other words, if you are obligated to do something that benefits another person, You are an agent of that other person. That person is the principal, and you are the agent. Understand this. The principal is the one to whom everything falls if things go wrong or if things go right. The agent is merely there to execute what is best for the principal. So if the agent does something wrong, the principal is the one who is assigned what we call respondeat superior. Respondeat superior. Otherwise put, the principal carries the vicarious liability. Well, I can't be sued because it was this guy working here who did what he wasn't supposed to, and blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. And I will start this lecture off, and I'll give you a couple of cases along the way. This one occurs, came out of West Virginia. That should tell you something right there. This is not going to be a good ending for this story. And there was a bar. It was a very popular bar with the good old boy crowd, where it was the usual place. There was hooting and hollering, drinking. There was darts, and there was a bartender who was pretty cool. He had some awesome things he could do with knives. He could throw knives at the dartboard and just nail it every time, and he could flip knives around and all that kind of stuff. Well, one night, one of the patrons, an old grizzled fellow, seen better years, tough as nails, just walked right through where the bartender was throwing a knife at the dartboard. And he turned and he saw the knife, which promptly punctured his left eye. Straight in. Well, that was a shock to everyone there. The whole place got quiet. I think even the jukebox stopped. But he stared at the guy with his other eye who had thrown the knife, and they all, well, we got to call, we'll call the ambulance. The hell you will, I'll drive myself to the hospital. And he did. He drove himself to the emergency room, got out of his truck of course, old truck, and walked into the emergency room, where the first person he saw was the receptionist who was quite busy with paperwork, and he walked up to her, and she didn't even look up at him. She just pushed the clipboard, said, "Fill it out, sit down, we'll call you." And he said, "Lady, ask me if this hurts." Whereupon she looked up and she went to a happy place, because there he was standing there with a knife sticking out of him. And so they had all of a sudden they realized there was something serious, because this very large woman had just hit the pater to go to sleep for a while, passed out, seeing this man sticking with a knife in his eye. Well, they did actually pull the knife out, and being from West Virginia, fortunately it didn't reach any brain tissue, and so I should not have said that. I'm going to hell for it. I'm sorry. But anyway, okay, obviously he sued the bar, the owners of the bar. And they said, no, this man was not authorized to toss those knives. No. So we are not responsible. You sue him, you can't sue us. Well, he gathered everyone together, and the court determined, yeah, he can sue, because even though the agent was acting outside of his duties, the owners knew damn well that he did this, and this was one of the popular attractions at that bar. So even though under contract he'd signed an agreement that he would abide by the rules and regulations of an employee, they had allowed for him to do this. They knew he was doing it on a continuing basis. So essentially, by this behavior on their part, they had acknowledged that this was acceptable under his employment agreement. and they had to pay for this man. Now, of course, they couldn't put his eye back in, but they did put a glass eye in, and he was back at the bar, not too many days later, getting drunk. And the assessment is that he was so drunk that he didn't even feel it happen. And even though he went from three-dimensional to two-dimensional sight, given the state that he was from, two-dimensional thinking is not entirely unknown to him. Okay. Now here's the thing, though. Now, agent-principal relationships are all over the place, and you're going to be in them, you have been in them, your whole life. And once you frame relationships in this way, they take on a color and a texture that is important for you as business people to know about. Here's the thing. Let's try some. Okay, you are an employee of Megacorp International. Okay? Now, are you an agent or the principal?
Principal.
No, you're an agent. You're maximizing the welfare of someone else. Who is it you are whose benefit are you maximizing?
Principal.
Who is the principal? No. No. You are maximizing, this one's one you wouldn't know. That's okay. You are maximizing the welfare of the stockholders, the owners, as a body. Not as individual shareholders, but as a body. You are the agent maximizing the wealth of those shareholders by maximizing the value of their stock. Not the price necessarily, but the value of their stock. That is sort of a minimal thing for you, though, as an employee. That becomes maximal at the level of the board of directors. They are elected by the stockholders to maximize the wealth of those stockholders in their holdings of that security. Okay? So, principal is a stockholder, board of directors is the agent, and each of the board of directors is the agent as well as the board as a whole. Now, there would be some who would argue with me about the individuals, but they are individually. Let's try this one. Marriage. Okay, you're the man and she is the woman, okay, and you're married. Who is the agent and who is the principal? Well, easy boy, easy. Your answer could determine how many teeth you have.
Technically, aren't we
both agents. Who's the principal? Bingo! The marriage is the principal. That's very good because, and here's the weird thing. Well, marriage isn't a person. Oh, yes, it is. You are both obligated to maximize the benefit, the welfare of that marriage. So when you see you just got married. You get a call from three of your old girlfriends. Hi, we got together and we're having a twerkathon and we'd like you to be the judge tonight. What do you say?
No,
you say damn straight I will. No, I'm sorry, yeah. That's right, you say no. Because that would not be maximizing the welfare of the marriage. Okay? The marriage is a person under the law. As a matter of fact, when you're in a marriage, legally, there are things that you are jointly held responsible for, like your taxes if you file a joint tax return. That's the marriage. You as a single person under the law. That's an interesting one. A soldier. Mm-hmm. Is a soldier the agent or the principal?
It's an agent
of
country.
No. Nope. To whom did I swear my oath?
America?
No. America. No, I swore my oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. Okay. A constitution. As I told you in that lecture, George W. Bush was reported to have said, it's just a goddamn piece of paper. He's right. The only life it has is through the agents who defend it against all adversaries, all enemies, foreign and domestic. Okay? Isn't that an interesting thing? A dead thing is given life through its agents. That's kind of an odd thing that we as the agents have such great power. And the principal has great weakness in many cases. The principal does not act, and the principal does not even have life until we have given that principal life. There is an interesting discussion I've had in previous semesters, which I will not try to in a class like this, given the complaints that I have had filed against me for being so irreligious. But there is an interesting... me? Irreligious? Hell no. Oh, no. There is an interesting discussion that has gone on, and it's actually gone on in Judaic tradition, in Hindu tradition to some extent, and in high theology in Catholicism, and in the Protestantism as well, about agency with respect to a God. Who's the agent and who's the principal? Well, okay, clearly the agent would be the individual serving to maximize the welfare of the God. But that does not require that the God actually be a living thing, because it is only through the agents that it has life. Now, the Greeks recognized this, interestingly enough, and so did the Romans, that if you did not worship their gods, if you ignored the gods, then the gods would wither and die. That's also true. I wrote an actual, actually about 10 years ago, I wrote a story that was based to show people what Norse legend was about. And in Norse legend, they have this belief that if the people who are supposed to worship the gods stop, then the gods die. They go, they vanish, they wither. So this is actually something that is a long-standing tradition. And we know this concept of agency goes back long, long in history. Agency goes clear back to the ancients, long before there was even writing. But I want to get something out here that's very important about agency. This is called the agency dilemma. The agency dilemma. And I'll begin this, and I'll use you as my example. You're driving down this long, smooth, straight country road on a beautiful sunny day, and you've got a really great car, and you see this speed limit sign, 55 miles an hour. Now, I've seen you people drive. You see that not as a suggestion. You see that not as a speed limit on the upper side. You see that as a speed limit on the lower side. And you, being the typical hoe handle from the prairie of Illinois, just slowly start putting your foot down on that pedal. 60, 80, 120. A voice with a Scottish accent in the back says, "Warp 6. And you begin to see stars streaming by you. You're just going to drive like a blind trout. I never knew what the hell that meant, but I say it. Okay? Way up the road in one of those drives into a field, you see a car. And then all of a sudden you notice, oh my God, that car's got lights on the top of it. Oh, is that one of them sheriff stars? Oh, so what are you going to do?
Probably go to jail.
No, what are you going to do? You see it way up the road.
Start slowing down.
Yeah. Have you ever noticed how people suddenly find Jesus when there's a cop around? They slow down and there's halo all around them and angels, ah! 5 minutes ago, you were driving like a maniac. You were a homicidal killer. Now, all of a sudden, why, anyway. Okay, so you start slowing down. Time begins to dilate again, and all that. Oh, God, that was close. Oh, he was standing out. Oh, God, he was standing outside his car. And then you realize, wait a minute, he's not standing, he's stooped over. Oh, my God, he is changing the tire on his car. So what are you going to do? Drive by him at 45 miles an hour like a good, fine, upstanding young stud? Or are you going to put that pedal back to the metal and drive by him? Hi, officer!
Probably start flying by him.
Yeah, just fly by that son of a bitch because he can't do anything to you. The lesson is here. And the agency dilemma. An agent has incentive to maximize its own interests. Instead of the principles. Instead of the principal's interest. The agent has incentive to maximize its own interest instead of the principal's interest. That's not to say that the agent will, but the agent has incentive to do it. Are you a good person? Don't think so. You say yes. What are you going to do when you go to the pearly gates and St. Peter says, were you a good person? Well, I think so. No, you say, Peter, I was a damn good person. And I'll send you to hell because you said damn. Are you an honest person?
Yeah.
I know. You look honest. I mean, I don't know why, but you just look so damn honest. I mean, I don't know. You, a little shady, definitely dodgy. No. We see ourselves as good, basically. I mean, that's, and most people, we want to imagine that they are good people until they show us that they aren't. And even then, we'll want to believe that they will redeem themselves if they say they will. But the truth of the matter is that every one of us has incentive to cheat, has incentive to do what we are not supposed to do because we're supposed to be doing something for someone else, but we're going to do something for ourselves instead. It is human nature. That first lecture of the semester, I asked you, do you like food? Do you like sex? I want you to recognize that these are not things that you deny. You have to recognize them before you can confront them. And in the agency dilemma, we acknowledge that every agent has incentive to maximize his or her own interest rather than the interest of the principal. Whether or not we do it is based upon a lot of factors. What the interest is, what the circumstances are as far as how much value is involved. But there are a couple of things that are very important in this. But we cannot blindly go into our world as managers, as people not recognizing that those who are supposed to maximize someone else's interest have an incentive to maximize their own. You might say, no, that's not true. I'm not going to be like that. I am a good man. I want to go to heaven. I won't sin. Someday, in your later years, you've lived a good life. You've lived a fabulously giving life. You've not sought anything for yourself. You have reached out to others. You've helped the poor. You have worked for the glory of God. And in one night, in the twilight of your life, in the darkness of your bedroom, suddenly this glow comes above you. And you hear the voices of angels. Hosanna. And coming out of the light is Jesus. My son, you have lived a good life, a life of self-denial. And you did this for no purpose other than the glory of heaven. Well, here's the thing. I lied. You're going to hell. No one goes to heaven. Gotcha. Ha ha ha. Burn. Now I send you back to the early part of your life. What are you going to do? The same thing, or are you going to live wild? You are going to commit every one of those, and you are going to multiply by that by 7 times 7 times 666. We believe that is a binding force. It doesn't bind us well, you know, but it does. But it's because we don't do because we are good. We do for some reason. Now, you might say that's an awful way to think about things. Why are you not basing your whole argument on faith in people, faith in the afterlife? And I go back to St. Augustine. Reason and rationality are the road, and only on the very last step should you rely on faith. Before that, people can cheat. The agents will extract value four ways. Four ways. One way they can we measure these in costs. The first is obvious: theft. Just stealing. You're supposed to not steal paper clips because those paper clips technically belong to the company, which belongs to the owners. But you're going to take a few home, right? Sure. You'd never do that, right? You would never do that at all. But you can't assume that those under you won't. Trust is a very important part of it, but as the great President Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify when it comes to nuclear arms agreements. The second one is called shirking. Deliberately avoiding your duties. Deliberately avoiding your duties. I have seen shirking. The person who hangs out at the water fountain instead of being at his cubicle. Not that I would think you would do that, but, you know. A great example. I've seen this one so many times. Managers who proudly say, my desk is clear every night when I go home. Well, you know what? I know some of those managers. You know what they do? They just take stuff off their desk and put it on their subordinates' desks and have them handle. They go home with a clean desk and a clean mind, and someone else is put to the task of doing what they were supposed to do. Shirking is a very common phenomenon in business. Don't you do it. Don't you let others do it to you. I'm sorry. That's above my pay grade. Put that back on your own desk. Perquisites. Taking inappropriate benefits because your position allows you to. Taking inappropriate benefits because your position allows you to. The famous story of the executive who has a desk that looks like the landing deck of an aircraft carrier. The fine Corinthian leather seat that his butt sits in. He doesn't need it. I was at a dinner some years back, and they were with some executives, and they made this comment. Well, you make such little money being a college teacher. Why don't you just work with us? We would love to have you as our comptroller. I said, no, you wouldn't love me that way. You fly on a company jet to places around the country. You stay in 5-star hotels, and you eat at excellent restaurants, like we are tonight. Well, first of all, Greyhound goes to almost every city. Uh-huh. And you know what? Hotels, I mean, I can show you really, really nice, cheap hotels. And you tell me that the ones you stay in have that quarter machine beside the bed that makes it vibrate. The ones I can put you in, $12 a night, they have that quarter machine. Uh-huh. And what the hell is wrong with McDonald's and Denny's? Why do you think you deserve this? You know where that money is coming from? That money is an expense that doesn't come down to the net income that's available to the shareholders, who are your principals. But they do it because they can do it. Perquisites. They can do it, so they do it. These insane CEO salaries are classic agency costs. These guys don't deserve that money. In a lot of cases, these guys are screwing the pooch on their company. Their companies are not doing their best because these people are not worth what they're paid. We're getting no more productivity out of a person for another $1 million on top of the last million we gave these SOBs. Same is true among coaches at the professional level. Perquisites, they are all over the place. And the last one is my favorite, incompetence. The inability to carry out the duties of the agent. The inability to carry out the duties. Have you ever worked with someone who's just as stupid as a box of rocks? If you haven't, you will. I promise you. Some years back, there was a management guru, a professor, and all that. His name was Dr. Peter, and he laid out something that people thought was a joke. They thought it was something funny. Ha ha. No, he didn't mean it to be funny. Well, he might have meant it to be a little funny, but it's actually a principle of management. It's called the Peter Principle. Every manager rises to his or her level of incompetence. Every manager rises to his or her level of incompetence. Now, let me explain what that means. You started right after out of college working for a very big, powerful company up in Chicago, and you're just a whiz bang. I mean, you just can't, you're just an animal with Excel spreadsheets, with database management, getting reports done. You're just a beast. And so people, the managers above you, notice. You know, in a meritocracy, it's meritocratic. You're going to be promoted. You're so good, we're going to put you up a level, put you in charge of a few people. Well, in that position, you're still an animal. You're still cranking out the work. You're a good motivator of your subordinates. And I mean, it's just incredible. So you get another promotion. And there you are outstanding. And it's just awesome. Get another promotion. And you're still great. Well, one day, now you're up about 5 levels in management, and everyone suddenly in your office stops, you know, the talking and the usual chit-chat and all that. It gets silent. And then over the loudspeakers, you hear, ba 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 ba, and in walks this black robe figure. Oh my God, it's the CEO of the corporation. You have not failed me. You are an incredible employee, and I shall now promote you to the vice president of finance. You know damn well you can't do that job. You can't do it. You know you can't do it. We shall give you a salary of $500,000 a year. You will have your own company car and your own expense account and the keys to the men's room. Do you accept? Join me. Together we can rule the galaxy. Join me or die. You're going to take it, right? Can't do a damn thing in that job. But you're going to take it, right? Of course you are. he rose to his level of incompetence, and that's where he'll stay. Until I've realized it. And throttle your neck. Scrawny neck. Okay? You look around you in any office, anywhere, in any company, and you will see people either on their way to or at their level of incompetence. That is the reality of it. People at the CEO level, they have risen to their level of incompetence, and there they are. Coaches of football teams, they have risen to their level of incompetence, and there they are. Almost every time. Now, many of them, a few of them might be able to rise to another level and be incompetent, and there's no other level. So you might have some who are excellent at the highest level, but for the most part, anywhere along the way, you are probably looking at someone who is on the road to that higher level of incompetence or is at his or her level of incompetence. That is the reality of it. Incompetence is the least measured but the most deleterious of all of the agency costs there is, because it is a hidden cost. It is a cost that covers itself. It is a cost that others will cover for someone. You will figure out how to use your how your incompetence can still get you by, probably through shirking, by having others do your work at your level for you. There is one Supreme Court justice who is famous for her incompetence. As a federal judge, she was well known to have her brilliant law clerks do her heavy lifting on intellectual work for cases. All she did was scream and cuss and swear at them. And now she's up at the Supreme Court level. She jumped, she made it two levels of incompetence. That's darn good, because she covered herself so well on her first level. Many senators are that way. There are some famous examples of senators like that. Go. Steve Jobs was a classic. Bill Gates was too. Long ago, they had passed their level of incompetence, but they were such violent, domineering bullies that they could go keep, they could actually rise with the tide of the true geniuses under them who were willing to accept follower status. As a matter of fact, we have a whole term for those people who are willing to accept domineering incompetence and support them and make them what they are. And so we see that quite a bit. As I told you, interestingly enough, I've met a number of people who are well known for their great wealth. They had this stroke of genius that made them rich people. Actually, they probably just had an accident and they got it right. I know a couple specifically. They didn't mean for it to happen the way it happened, but it happened incredibly well for them. And then ever after that, they were smart enough to know that they didn't have any mojo, so they were going to get people who did have it under them. And you'd be surprised at how people fall down on their knees for money. In the case of a certain group of professors here, it took only $1,000 for them to fall on their knees to an authoritarian. Don't be disappointed in people when you see that. It's human nature. Just be careful when you see it and know how to get around it or to live with it. Here's the thing, though. When you were driving that car on the road, the thing was that monitoring and enforcement were the two key elements. You see, no contract with an agent is any better than the monitoring provisions of it. If you can't see them do something, then you can't enforce agency rules on them. If you can't, even if you can see it, but you don't know how to handle it, you don't have any enforcement ability, then the contract's no good either. So these two, the contract must have monitoring and enforcement, both. Enforcement means nothing if you can't see it. Monitoring means nothing if you aren't going to do anything about it. But you understand that the agency dilemma is not an evil of people. I keep trying to come back to this, and I keep coming back to this in this course. I did it at the first. Saying that, well, agents, we're looking at a world in a dark, ugly way isn't real, because we have these incentives to do what is best for ourselves, even though we know that it's not the right thing to do for the principal. You have an incentive to go to that twerkathon. You have an incentive. I mean, after all, I mean, she's not going to be home until tomorrow. She's on a flight. She's on a trip somewhere. What the hell? Nah. But you see, theft. You're going to see theft in organizations. Some of it's going to be petty theft. The question is it worth the cost of monitoring to catch the theft? Or is it so trivial that it's better just to leave it alone? Sometimes you have to answer that question. Shirking. I want you to imagine yourselves 15 years from now. You have come home, dragging home from this incredibly long day at work. You're absolutely exhausted. You stagger in and you plop down in your chair. And there are your kids bouncing up and down. By the way, parent and child relationship. Who is the who is the agent and who's the principal? Can you tell me that? What would you say?
I'd say the parent's the agent.
Bingo. Because the parent is the one who has to maximize the welfare of the child. The child is the principal in the relationship. That's an odd thing, but when you think of it that way, it clarifies a lot of your duties. Look, you stagger in here. You're the agent. You're supposed to maximize the welfare of that child. You are absolutely exhausted, and you flop down in your chair, and there are your kids bouncing up and down. Yay, yay! The parent units are home, bouncing up and down on the furniture, swinging from the chandelier that you just bought, you know, peeing themselves. There's one of your kids bouncing up and down on the couch. You know, you stop that. Here, come here. Let me give you my belt. Beat yourself on the butt and stand in the corner. You're bad. Yeah. You're exhausted. What you're supposed to do is get up. Oh, sweetie, come on. Let's get off the couch. Come on, let's go into the kitchen. And let's make a nutritious meal. And we'll play some games and I'll read you bookies and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. Come on, sweetheart. No, no, no. At best, you're going to grovel out of your chair. You're going to throw some nuke and puke in the microwave. Here's your damn dinner. Eat, kid. Oh, that looks tasty. Look, there's a dinosaur on the front of it. You're going to say, yeah, there's the computer. Don't watch porn. Not too much, anyway. Stay away from that one site that daddy watches. I better not see you on that site later. Anyway, okay. You have an incentive because even though you're supposed to maximize the welfare of that child, you as the agent are going to have an incentive to maximize your own welfare instead. But it is the principal's obligation. It's not the agent's obligation in a normal agency relationship. It is the principal's obligation to monitor and enforce, not the agent's. It is the principal's obligation. But you're saying, well, that couldn't be in this case. You're right. You see, agency relationships come in two flavors. There's normal agency. In a normal agency relationship, the principal is responsible for monitoring and enforcing the performance of the agent. But there's another kind, too. A doctor-patient relationship. A doctor-patient relationship. Who is the agent and who's the principal in a doctor-patient relationship? Bingo, exactly, good. Because the doctor is there to maximize the welfare of you, the patient. So you're the principal, the doctor's the agent. In a lawyer-client relationship, the lawyer is there to maximize your benefit. So the lawyer is the principal, the agent, and you are the principal. Again, like the soldier is the agent, the Constitution is the principal. The two parties to a marriage are the agents, and the marriage is the principal. But here's what I'm getting at. You see, I've just laid out a whole series of agency relationships where the principal cannot monitor and enforce effectively. A child doesn't know how to monitor and enforce performance by the parents. A patient doesn't know how to monitor and enforce performance by the doctor, especially if you're under anesthetic and you're in surgery. You cannot, by definition, monitor and enforce. In a lawyer-client relationship, you are the principal, but you don't have any training in law that would serve you adequately to defend yourself. You are entirely at the mercy of the knowledge of the lawyer. The Constitution, it can't monitor and enforce performance by the soldiers. The marriage is just another piece of paper. It cannot monitor and enforce performance by the man and the woman, the husband and the wife. So you see, what I'm describing here, I'm laying out a very unusual kind of agency relationship. This is that second flavor. We call these relationships where there is a defect in the principal's ability to monitor and enforce. Again, these special agency relationships are where there is a defect in the principal's ability to monitor and enforce. In that case, we are talking about a fiduciary relationship. And the agent's duties are no longer just normal agent, maximize the welfare of the principal. Principal will monitor and enforce. In this case, in a fiduciary relationship, the agent's duties become fiduciary duties. Fiduciary duties. Fiduciary duties are characterized. Now, this is Black's Law Dictionary. Black's Law Dictionary states it like this, and I'm going to explain why this is such a nuanced and important thing. Black's Law Dictionary describes fiduciary duty as the highest duty implied by law. Let me make sure you understand what that says. The highest. You can't get any higher than that. And there is no relative in highest. This one is heavy. It says implied. In other words, this is common law. This law carries through the ages, back to the origins of our peoples and our tribes. From one side of the world to the other. From the bitter mountains of the Himalayas to the hot sands of Africa. From the steppes of Eastern Europe to the plains of America. This is beyond written law. This is part of us. It inheres to us. The fiduciary duty is characterized by three pillars: trust is the first of them. Fidelity, which means faithfulness. Trust and fidelity. What's the third? Does anyone know the third? Could you guess the third? Could you? Want to take a stab? Trust, fidelity. I'll leave it to you to find the third. It's in the PowerPoint that I'll put up for this lecture, okay? It makes you so you'll have to see it. But understand this. Now, I put up a PowerPoint that helps with this lecture. It'll be up in a few hours, so this will help you with it. But I want you to make sure that you check, because there's the third one's there. Now, I want you, yeah. Belief. Huh? Belief. Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
Loyal.
Oh, ouch, damn. loyalty. Cheater. I know. It's interesting because it is in us, though. We understand this. In your lives, you may be fortunate enough to be in a place of fiduciary duty where you as a body of people are the principal and you as individuals are the agents. That's a very cool thing because in that you have this sense of the band of the brothers and sisters. And that's one of the things that is promoted in some of these secret societies like one I belong to, the Freemasons. We are the band. We are, we are the ones who are controlling the world and planning the apocalypse and all that. Isn't that cool? I mean, it's awesome, man. I mean, you know, Nick Cage, he comes to us and asks for advice on his next movie, you know, and all that. But you see, being part of something, being a soldier in a combat unit, that's cool. Being a person who is in a small corporation that is growing, that is that sense of the trust that you must have for each other, the faithfulness and the loyalty. A parent-child relationship is a fiduciary relationship because the parents' duties are fiduciary. They're based upon the trust and the faithfulness and the loyalty of the parent. And that's why it is so tragic when a parent hurts a child or just simply ignores a child because you are doing something that is anciently wrong. But I warn you about something in this right here. The highest duty is a fiduciary duty. But you're going to face the possibility in your life that you're going to have more than one fiduciary relationship at the same time. You understand? You might have a fiduciary duty to a corporation. The body of shareholders cannot monitor you and enforce what they want. So you are in a fiduciary relationship with them because they can't see the financial statements. They can't see the business judgments until you let them see them. And that makes it a fiduciary relationship right there and then. Your marriage, which might be happening at the same time. You must be completely honest. Completely faithful, trustworthy, and loyal to that partner in the marriage. You might also have children. You might have a side business, and every one of those is a fiduciary duty because there is something or someone who is entirely dependent upon the trust, the fidelity, and the, I hate saying this, that true blue loyalty. Know this, highest does not have a ranking. So if you have a fiduciary duty if you're in a fiduciary type of relationship in a corporation, and you're in a fiduciary relationship as like a marriage and in a fiduciary relationship like in kids, you don't rank them. You cannot rank them, which means that you are facing one hell of a difficult thing. When in the 1990s, I was working hard to build my consulting corporation, I was totally fiduciary. I was a total fiduciary agent of this corporation and its owners. I was one of them, but there were others. And I saw that as my highest duty under the law. But I also had a marriage, and I also had children. Well, here's what happens if you put too many highest duties and you start trying to rank them, as I did. One night, I had fulfilled for the day my fiduciary duties to my corporation. And I went home at about 11 o'clock, and there was no one there anymore. It seems that a fiduciary relationship really does bite you in the ass if you pretend that it doesn't exist. You cannot rank. So you make your choices wisely in this life, unlike I did, because in the end, you cannot serve more than one master. That's all I have for you for this semester. I thank you for being my students.